Introduction by Thomas S. Cowan. I am no stranger to controversial views, particularly controversial positions in the field of medicine. In my latest series of three books, I have denounced several sacred icons that form the basis of our attitudes toward disease and its treatment. In Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, I clearly demonstrated that the heart is not a pump and that blocked arteries are not the predominant cause of heart attacks. Then, in Vaccines, Autoimmunity U, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness, I proposed the theory that acute illness is not caused by an infection that attacks us from the outside but rather represents a cleansing of our watery, cellular gels. A corollary to this position is that any intervention that interferes with this cleansing response, in particular vaccines, is bound to create untold harm that manifests in skyrocketing rates of chronic disease. In what I thought would be my third and final book, Cancer and the New Biology of Water, I show why the war on cancer is an utter failure. I argue that the modern chemotherapeutic approach to cancer is useless and that an entirely new way of looking at this problem must emerge. I postulated that this new way of looking at medicine and biology must put the question of what actually causes disease squarely in the forefront of our thinking. I thought I was done with writing controversial books, at least about medicine, and that I could turn my attention to finishing out my career as a practicing physician, spending more time in the garden, and creating a healing place for myself, my friends, and my family. I knew I would continue doing occasional interviews and maybe some online classes or mentoring. I would still talk about the nature of water and the increasing pollution of our earth, but I also hoped that interest in my work would wane and simply become part of the general consciousness, a new way of thinking that would change our attitude toward disease and rehumanize the practice of medicine. I did have a nagging thought, which had been there for years, that I needed to delve into the HIV/AIDS affair, but I was content to let that be. It was more like an itch that only occasionally begged to be scratched. Not long ago I had lunch with a homeopathic physician, and we were joking about our respective long careers in medicine, and how much things have changed over the years. For some reason, the conversation turned to immunology, and we asked each other what we remembered learning in medical school about immunology, that was back in the early 1980s. We both jokingly concluded that the only thing we remember was being taught that if you wanted to know whether a patient was immune to a particular viral disease, you could test antibody levels. If the antibodies were high, that meant they were immune. Just as people remember for the rest of their lives the moment they heard that JFK was shot, or about the World Trade Center towers coming down on September 11th, I have a vivid memory of hearing the announcement by Robert Gallo in 1984 that they had found the cause of AIDS. It was caused by a virus called HIV, and the reason they knew it caused AIDS is that they found elevated antibody levels in some, not all, AIDS patients. I remember turning to a fellow medical student at the time and saying, "Hey, who changed the rules?" In other words, after having spent the previous 4 years learning that people with antibodies to a virus were immune to that particular virus, we were now being told, with no explanation whatsoever, that antibodies meant that the virus was actually causing the disease. I didn't buy it then, and I don't buy it now. For more than 35 years, I have read countless articles, books, papers, and documents about the lack of connection between HIV and AIDS. This naturally led me to investigate the connection between viruses and other diseases, and what I discovered was shocking, to say the least. That is the background of my now famous 10-minute video about the cause of the coronavirus pandemic. Even though I have been aware for decades that the virus king is naked, I was hoping that others would take up the challenge to relay this information to the general public. But a 10-minute video thrust me onto the stage. It happened like this. In early 2020, I received an invitation to speak at a health conference in Arizona. I knew almost nothing about the group that invited me, but they gave me a first-class airplane ticket, so I agreed. I wasn't clear on what topic they wanted me to speak, but since I never speak with slides or notes, I figured I would improvise, as usual. Interestingly, a few times in the weeks leading up to this event, my wife asked me where I was going, to whom I was speaking, and what the subject was. I just shrugged and said they seemed like nice, earnest people. A few weeks earlier, the whole coronavirus event started to dominate the news. At first, I didn't think much of it, figuring that this was just another in a long line of viral scares. Remember SARS, MERS, avian flu, Ebola, swine flu, and Zika. These were going to kill us all, but then just faded away. But with coronavirus, things started to intensify, particularly the dramatic, draconian responses by the authorities. Still, I didn't think much about it, although I did wonder whether the illnesses were the initial consequences of the planned 5G rollout, or perhaps a cover-up for the rollout. I thought about skipping the conference in Arizona, mostly because I was afraid of being quarantined there and not allowed to return home. I decided I was being paranoid and that I might as well honor my agreement to speak. When I arrived at the conference, I discovered that there were only 20 or 30 attendees. The three other speakers had all canceled or decided to do their talks via Skype or Zoom. I was scheduled to do one talk each day of the two-day conference. The first day's talk was on acute illness and vaccines, my usual stump speech on that subject, with a talk on heart disease on the second day. That night we started to hear more about quarantines and grounded planes. Given the sparse attendance, I spent part of that first night online to see whether I could catch an earlier flight home and just skip my second talk. I slept fitfully, worried about whether I should catch the 7 a.m. flight instead of my scheduled 1 p.m. flight. I decided that was crazy, and as long as I was there, I would do my talk on the heart and maybe end with a few comments about viruses and the current situation. To say I didn't know I was being taped is not accurate, as I obviously wore a microphone and a guy in the back of the room seemed to be filming me, at least some of the time. But in my mind, I was clearly speaking to that group of 20 or 30 people. At the end of the talk, I made a few off-the-cuff remarks about why viruses do not cause illness. I said my piece and left for the airport. I was one of 10 or so people on the plane, and I made it safely home, very glad to be there. A few days later, I got an email from Josh Coleman, the guy who filmed the video, saying he had posted my remarks on viruses somewhere online, and it was getting a huge response. I thought that this might be interesting but not much more. The rest, as they say, is history. I have no idea how widely circulated that 10-minute video has become or how many people have seen it. Josh tells me that it has had more than 1 million views. I only knew that I needed to speak more about this subject, even if only to clarify what I had said at the conference. Interest in my comments came from people all over the world. Overnight I had become the point person for an alternative view of viruses, the germ theory, the current health situation, and a lot more. This led to a few podcast interviews, including one with Sayer G on greenmedinfo.com, and my own webinars. Of course, I was criticized and even received some shocking threats, but I have also received support in ways I could never have imagined. I meant no harm to anyone. I am one man with a certain perspective, hopefully correct in some things, and, if incorrect in other things, I ask my readers only to understand that any errors come out of a place of seeking the truth and my ability to understand the situation. Two things press me forward. The first is to make it possible for all of us to live in a world where everyone can speak their minds and hearts freely without fear of recrimination or abuse. What could possibly be wrong with having an open and honest debate about the nature and cause of illness and disease? This is a complex question, and no one person or group has all the answers. But isn't that what real science, as opposed to scientism, is supposed to be about? Second, I am concerned that if my understanding of the current situation is even close to correct, an understanding for which we intend to make a clear and convincing case in these pages, then humanity is at a crossroads right now. There will be profound, even unimaginable consequences for all life on Earth if we fail to heed the messages that emerge from the current situation. My contention is that if we fail to understand the true causes of the coronavirus pandemic, we will go down a bitter path from which there will be no turning back. That is what is driving me to write this book. I am happy to be writing this book with fellow iconoclast Sally Fallon Morrill. Sally and I have been friends, collaborators, this is our third book together, and, I dare say, spiritual partners for over two decades. With a small contribution from me, Sally founded the Weston A. Price Foundation in 1999, perhaps the single best resource available for bringing truth in food, medicine, and farming to a world starving for that truth. I sincerely wish this to be the last book Sally and I work on together. We have enjoyed collaborating, but I expect that the current pandemic we are living through will be a profound turning point in the history of humanity. It is my hope that out of this event, a new way of life will emerge in a world free of poisoned food, poisoned water, and the poisonous and false germ theory. In this world, I envision no need for Sally and myself to write books. People will just know how to live. They will know that to poison their food, water, air, and the electric sheath of the earth is something only madmen can contemplate. We both look forward to the day when we can forget about warning people about this or that and spend more time growing and cooking food and sharing it in joy and laughter with our families, friends, and neighbors. No more books. After this, dear friends, you will know all you need to know. Buckle up, folks, we are in for the ride of our lives. Thomas S. Cowan. July 2020.